London Calling, David here. This is another of those Meet Your Guide interviews. I've got Philip at the other end of the line. Hello, Philip.
Hi, David.
And Philip is a specialist. If you want to think of London almost as a kind of a pie, his specialty, I would say, would be heading kind of north and northwest and northeast from the center of London. But we'll get to that first in a minute. Philip, let's just a little bit about Philip. Tell me, are you a Londoner bred and born, Philip?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I've always lived in North London. And so it's especially pleasing to be able to take people on walks on what really is my local area.
Oh, fantastic. So that really is local knowledge, is that right?
Yes, that's right. Particularly Clerkenwell, Highbury, those sorts of areas are very familiar to me for the whole of my life.
Okay. Now, you know, I've got a standard question, Philip, but it's a good question, and that's that nobody when they're 8 years old thinks, oh, I want to be a walking tour guide when I grow up. You know, in my case, it was I wanted to be the center fielder for the New York Yankees, and people want to be doctors or lawyers or cowboys or explorers, etc. How about Philip? What about you?
Okay, well, I can certainly sympathize with the sports idea because I'm a total sports nut. And certainly in my early years, played a lot of football, a lot of cricket, and would have loved to have been a professional sports person, but really not that good. And so I had a bit of a maths bent to start, and that was how I got into accountancy, which was my first profession. Graduated from there, change of career into marketing, and that was really when I learned the things that hold me hopefully in good stead as a guide, because you're presenting with marketing, you're presenting to people all the time and trying to get them on your side and finding out a bit more about them as well.
Uh-huh. So did you say you did a math degree then?
I don't actually have a degree at all. That's a terrible admission. But yeah, I had quite a lot of studied maths, quite a bit.
Righto. Right. Life. And yeah. Was that useful in the marketing thing?
Not really. No. As I say, I started off as an accountant, and that's where it came into.
Use. I see. I see.
But I changed over to marketing through a hobby of mine. I played competitive Scrabble at quite a high level, and I was actually invited by the company that marketed Scrabble to come over into their marketing department, and spent about 20 years marketing Scrabble.
That is fantastic. So did you start playing Scrabble as a youngster then?
Yeah, I started at home, I think like most people do, playing with the family, and then found out there were competitions and got into playing competitively. And I still do that occasionally, but I probably spent 20 years really playing quite a lot competitively.
So 20 years ago, that's fairly close to being pre-digital. Does that mean you were on the road? You were going to competitions elsewhere than from away from London?
Yeah, certainly the national and international competitions are face-to-face competitions across the Scrabble board. So digital is used for less important events. So even now in the digital age, most of the important competitions are played face-to-face, or at least they were until the pandemic hit us a year or two ago.
Live and learn. I had no idea there are national and international Scrabble competitions, and you were going to these competitions.
That's right. Yes, I won the national championship on more than one occasion.
My goodness!
I played in one world championship, and then actually working marketing the game itself, I actually organized several world championships.
Philip, is it like chess? A really good chess player can always beat an amateur. Is that true of Scrabble as well?
Not quite, no, because there is, as I'm sure you're aware, a luck element in Scrabble, and no matter how good you are, you can't always overcome that luck. Uh-huh. The luck element's estimated to be about 10%, something like that. So if you are good and you have a good knowledge of unusual words, which is unfortunately essential in Scrabble, so you do need to learn words to be a top player, you can combat that luck element to a great degree, but it's still there.
But you obviously were, good enough, got enough visibility that the people who produced that game noticed you and hired you. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a sort of poacher turned gamekeeper, or turning your hobby into your profession. That was I've been very lucky in that respect. I don't think there's many people that get to do that.
And are you still?
Is sort of another version of that for me as well.
And Philip, are you still playing Scrabble?
I don't play as much as I used to. I just play in a local league. Again, that was affected by a pandemic as well. But I do still play at a much lower level than I used to. And the whole game itself has become incredibly sophisticated and advanced since I was sort of in my pomp.
Well, that's interesting. That's interesting. So let's segue now to guiding. How did all that come about?
Yeah, so when I finished my business career in marketing, I'd always been interested in history, and as I said, I was very used to presenting to people, and I've always enjoyed meeting people, and so guiding sort of presented itself as a natural way of something else that I could move into and use my skills, and luckily, that's what's happened.
Did you there are some of those courses, and you're talking to someone who's not a qualified guide. I haven't done the Blue Badge, I haven't done the City of London course, I haven't done the Clark and Well course, or the Westminster course. What about you? Are you badged?
I started with the Clark and Well course, which I really enjoyed. And I have done the Westminster course as well, so I'm qualified in those areas.
Right.
But I like to think I've got a pretty good knowledge of the whole of London, so I could be talking about the city and Camden and all the other ones, which all the other sort of areas that have their own guiding associations.
Has the guiding made you see your home city in a different light at all?
Yes, I think it has. It's one thing to think you know your city well, and then it's another thing to actually have to have the knowledge to guide people around. So I know I knew the main streets. I worked certainly early in my life in the City of London, but I didn't know all the back streets, and I didn't know all the stories, and there were whole areas of history that I didn't know at all, which I learnt once I've become a guide. And because I'm interested in history, it's no problem for me at all to learn. I really want to know more and more about the city. And London, nobody gets to know everything about London.
Uh-huh. I think it's often the case that people can remember quite vividly their first walk, the first time they guided. Is that the case with you? Do you remember your first walk?
The first one I did after I qualified I was walking along a slippy path by the side of a canal and actually slipped over.
Oh, no.
Guiding about a dozen people, I fell over. That was a bit of a good way to start. I didn't actually, thankfully, fall in the canal, which would have been even worse. But very much physically and mentally brought me down to earth. Yeah.
You know, if you had gone in the drink, that would have been the most memorable walk that any of those 12 would have ever gone on.
Yeah, thankfully, I mean, assuming I'd have got out, I'd have been so embarrassed. I don't think I could have carried on there.
Yeah. I hope you were wearing an albino white coat that got muddied up terribly or anything like that.
Let's not embroider it too much.
Yeah.
I was
very good. Philip, that I just lost you there. What stretch of the canal was that?
Yeah, that was the canal that runs through Islington, Regent's Canal, and just near the Islington Tunnel.
So, how many years have you been guiding then?
Okay, so I've been guiding now about 8 years.
Uh-huh. So you're right in your prime then. That's the
I like to think so. Pretty experienced now.
Yes.
As I say, there's always more to learn.
Sure. And how many do you have under your belt, Philip? How many walks do you do?
How many different walks do I do? Yeah. I've probably got about 20 different walks that I perform.
Go on, rattle. Take us through some of them. Name some names.
Oh gosh, need warning of that.
You don't have to do all 20.
One I do most is my Highbury walk. I'm an Arsenal fan, and I get to talk about Arsenal for about 50% of that walk, which is good fun. But we also look at the area of Highbury and the history attached there, which has a huge amount. Other walks, Islington Between the Wars is another favourite of mine. I've got some new walks. One I call London Heart of Stone, which is from the Temple through to Smithfield, looking at buildings and sculptures. Sculpture is a bit of an interest. I've done a number of different walks, mainly about modern sculpture. Not all of these get to London walks, but I think I've got a reasonably wide view. I did try to do some sports walks, because I did mention at the beginning I'm really sports nut, but those ones don't seem all that popular, so I've had to drop them most disappointingly.
Yeah. I just have to ask you. Go ahead.
Of course, I've got a walk coming up with London Walks, and that is the Elizabethan Clerkenwell, which is another one of my regular walks.
When are we doing that one?
We're doing that one on 17th of July, Saturday.
Right,
17th of July.
Right. Yeah. I just have to ask you, have you ever had on one of those walks that goes up that way, have you ever had a Spurs or a West Ham or a Chelsea fan? And what happens then?
That's an interesting question. Yeah, I think that people that come on the walks are generally pretty open to everything. So I think if you're coming on a walk about Arsenal, you know, you pretty much acknowledge you're going to hear about Arsenal. So I've never had someone specifically come on my walk to barrack me the whole time. But I certainly get some fans from different clubs on the walk, because some of the more open-minded fans are quite like to hear about the other clubs. And we do talk about Tottenham, actually, because it's very difficult to talk about Arsenal without talking about their greatest rivals.
I'm just curious, are there any Arsenal players on the England side?
In the Euros, Bukayo Saka has made his not his debut, but he's only played for England a few times, but he's been quite instrumental in England's improvement in the last two
games. So this surely must mean that you went to some games in the old stadium that held about, about 32,000, 33,000 people?
Yeah, it's there's two answers to that question. When they left the stadium in 2006, the capacity was 38,000. And that was the pretty much the reason that they left, because to maintain themselves as a top team, they needed more revenue from a larger stadium. But going back, the same stadium without the health and safety rules that came in around about 2000 would contain up to 70,000 people. So when I was very young, I was going, and you know, we were all absolutely squeezed together, and nobody thought any problem, anything about that. And as I say, the health and safety requirements were a lot less.
I've just learned something absolutely fascinating. I saw a couple of games, matches, in that old stadium. And I never would have dreamed that it, I suppose everybody was standing. Is that how you managed to get 70,000 into
it? Pretty much, yeah. I'm exaggerating saying there were 70,000 at every match, but the numbers that used to go to those matches were amazing. And as I say, certainly for big games, over 70,000 wasn't that unusual.
I'm going to school you now, Philip. As you know, I'm a Yank, and there's a baseball team in Los Angeles called the Los Angeles Dodgers, and they started in Brooklyn, and they played at Ebbets Field. And one of the reasons they moved to the other coast was that Ebbets Field Stadium was very old, and it didn't hold many people, and there was a lot more money to be made from having a stadium that would hold 68,000 or whatever it was. But I remember thinking when I went to see a couple of Arsenal matches, and this is back in the 70s, my goodness, this is the English equivalent of going to Ebbets Field in the 1940s and 1950s, because it was so intimate. You know, it was small, and you were very, very close to the players. So there you go.
I think that's something which football supporters of my sort of era notice now, because when you go to a game, it is a different atmosphere. It's not as loud, it's a little bit more clinical, and that is a factor of not being so intimate. Say those sort of 60 or 70,000 that you would get at Arsenal pre the change in the health and safety guidelines, you're getting a similar amount at a ground which is maybe three times the size of Highbury.
I have this recollection of you telling me that you guided it, or you still maybe do guide at the stadium. Is that right?
Yes, I do. Yes, we welcome visitors from all around the world 7 days a week on the Arsenal tour, and I'm part of that.
Now, Philip, you know, the rest of the world knows about football, or what I as a Yank would call soccer, but my lot pretty much don't know all that much, if anything. But when we get back to normal, we start getting Americans over here again. Would that walk be right for them? Are there things about that walk, even if they're, as I am, splendidly ignorant about the most popular game in the world?
Well, yeah, I mean, the history of Highbury is very interesting. The stadium, the two stadiums, the old stadium is still there. It's been converted into apartments, but you've got the still got the old stands, which are listed buildings. And you've still got the pitch, which has been converted into a garden for the residents. So if you've got any interest in sport, I think looking at the stadiums, the old and the new, is a very interesting contrast. for any sports fan, even if you're not the biggest soccer or a football fan in the world. But actually, we Americans, I guess since you were there, David, have become huge football fans. And I think the World Cup that was held in South America had more Americans than had more people from America than anywhere else, individual country in the world.
Oh, that's interesting. So we're catching up, are we?
Yeah, and everybody seems to watch the Premier League.
And have to interesting.
Getting up at strange hours of the day and night in order to do so.
This is the problem with being an expat. It unfits you for both places. there you go. So what about some of the other elements of Highbury, though?
So Highbury is quite an ancient place. There's the old Great North Road that's been around since back end of the 12th century that runs through there, and so you've got particularly the Highbury Manor, which sadly is not there anymore, but that was there from the 12th century. That was controlled by the Knights of St. John. And the Knights of St. John were a very powerful organization, who actually were the treasurers for the monarch. And so Highbury Manor in particular was a sort of a country retreat. It's rather quaint now to think of Highbury being a country retreat rather than in inner London. But that's where the history of Highbury starts.
And also, it's really convenient to Islington, isn't it? And Islington is fascinating and has good eateries as well. My favorite French restaurant is in Islington. Right. So I expect you can give them good recommendations at Walks In, can't you?
Yes. I've got one that I didn't mention, which involves eating and drinking and the sort of entertainment that's available around that area. So you've got a number of theatres in Islington and Highbury, cinemas, some of the history of those history of theatre and history of cinema comes from those areas. And as you say, you've got people like Otto Lengi in Islington, and other great eateries. Robert Carrier from the 1960s, his Frederick's restaurant, which still exists. There was a huge amount of work there. Actually, I just got that wrong. Frederick's is not Carrier, but Carrier had a restaurant there.
Right. Well, we started with me sort of describing, I said it's almost like a piece of pie, or you could think of it as a kind of fan shape. And I'm just wondering, are you going to push the two sides of the fan? One would be east, I guess, toward Canonbury, is that right? And west, are you going to conquer more territory, Philip, and create more walks? And north as well. What's due north of Highbury?
Yeah, well, I live in Southgate, which is the sort of far north of London. And I do a walk around Southgate, which is great fun. It's absolutely incredible, really. My old tutor came on my walk of Southgate, and he said he maintains that anywhere in London, there is so much history that you can do a walk anywhere in London. So maybe I should start looking at those areas. They're not quite as popular as nearer the city.
You know, you get a good title, we'll be able to make them work, Philip.
Yep.
I think that's the key to it. Well, let's backtrack down toward the center then. How about Clerkenwell? What do you tell me something about Clerkenwell and Philip?
So Well, let's talk about Elizabethan times in Clerkenwell.
Yeah.
Some of the buildings that were around in Elizabethan times are still there, three in particular. You've got the you've got Charter House there, which of course was a priory, and that had a huge amount of history there. Queen Elizabeth I was there regularly. You've got Bart's Hospital and the immediate area of Smithfield, which had all sorts of things going on. You had a jousting area there in Elizabethan time.
You just faded again, Philip. Can I get you to start over and tell me, you know, what you? In fact, let's start over with this whole section because it just went. Couldn't hear you at all. So okay. Yeah, talk Clerkenwell to me.
Okay, so let's talk specifically about the Elizabethan times in Clerkenwell, because it's very rich in history, and you have three buildings which are still there, which were there in Elizabethan times. You have Charter House Priory, where there were all sorts of royal goings on. The Queen Elizabeth was there on several occasions. You've got Bart's Hospital as well, and the Bartholomew Church, which dates right back to the 1100s, and the Smithfield area, where Queen Mary, before Elizabeth, used to watch the hangings of Christian martyrs. And then you've got a lovely building called St. John's Gate. I mentioned the Knights of St. John. They've had their headquarters in Clerkenwell since the early 1500s. And one of the buildings there actually contained a man called the Master of the Revels, who used to approve Shakespeare's plays for performance in London. Everything in London had a censor, had to say it was okay to be performed. So that's the very old part of Clerkenwell. And then, of course, you have the slightly more modern buildings, Smithfield itself, the association with the meat market. And just everywhere you walk around that area is full of history.
Yeah, that gatehouse, I mean, that's an astonishing thought, that you're looking at a building that Shakespeare will have walked up to and walked into with, you know, the manuscript of Measure for Measure.
That's right.
Twelfth Night. I mean, it's...
Apparently, if it was a fairly small play with not too many people, they actually used to perform it in the building. Or if it was a larger play, they had a nice courtyard outside the window. Master of the Revels would rather royally look on the play from the window and then sort of decide whether it was suitable for allowing to be performed.
I couldn't recommend it more highly. It's such an interesting area. Go on Phillip's Walk, everybody. Anyway, well, look, we've gone on for 31 minutes, so let's wrap it up and hope there's not too much of an echo, and then maybe we can, maybe you'll come back and talk some more about some of your outings, some of your doings, a few months down the road.
I've enjoyed the chat. I must like speaking about myself, but I also like speaking about the areas I'm sort of committed to, and Clerkenwell certainly is one of those. So I'd be very happy to come and talk more about Clerkenwell and the walks around that area.
But not this Saturday night, that's for sure, right?
Oh, right. I'll probably be watching football on Saturday.
Okay, Philip. Thanks very much, indeed.
Thank you.
All right, all best. Cheers, thanks.
Bye.
Bye.